Rules Committee to order. We are an official subcommittee of one to hear a plethora of bills, Senate Bill 164, Senate Bill 587, SGR 8, and SB 466. We're going to go ahead and start out with Senate Bill 164. I would ask the committee administrator to give us a little information about the bill and ask Mr. Limbach to come on forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senate Bill 164 requires people being paid to gather signatures on state initiative, referendum, or recall petitions to register with the Secretary of State. It also prohibits the altering of information about a person signing the signature page of a referendum, initiative, or recall petition by persons other than the person signing the petition.
Great. Thank you. Mr. Limbach, why don't you tell us why you support this bill?
Okay, for the record, I'm John Limbach. I'm Director of Elections in the Secretary of State's office. We believe this bill would help restore public confidence in the petitioning process in Oregon by doing four things. First of all, one of the main provisions of the bill would state that only the person who's asked to sign a petition can write the required information about themselves on the petition. This provision would be helpful in increasing the odds that a person's signature will be counted. We've noted two significant problems in past election cycles, and I have brought copies of some of the petitions to show you to illustrate those two major problems. The first is the use of writers, so-called writers, by the companies that are in the petition signature gathering business. The way this process works is that usually one of these signature gatherers carries more than one petition at a time. And they will tell a prospective signer, just complete all of the information, the signature, date signed, printed name, residence address, city and zip code on the first petition, then just sign your name to the others, and we'll fill in the rest of the information on the others for you. And this sort of helps the signer sort of take care of it more quickly. The problems that we've seen with that, of course, there are a couple of them that I think are serious. One is we've noticed in these past cycles that the people who are employed to write don't always do it accurately. They'll look at a signature and then they'll print the name, and when they print the name, they'll spell the name wrong from the signature. And if you look at the back of this packet, I handed out a petition sheet for you. At the back of the packet, there are three sheets that look like this, and I want you to pay attention to those first. On the first one that looks like this, here's an example of a signature in which a person named Linda Thomas signed the petition. And the writer, as you can see there on line 16, when they printed the name as Lindsay Thomas. Well, what happened was when that signature went to the county, you know, sort of looked at the signature and said, gee, that's not real clear. So the person verifying that signature typed in the printed version, Lindsay Thomas. And Lindsay Thomas didn't show up on the list. And so Linda Thomas, who wanted her signature, obviously, on that petition, she signed it. Her signature was rejected by the county because Lindsay Thomas didn't show up in their database. If you take a look at the one right after that, here's another example where somebody wrote in...
Which page is that?
Somebody...
Second to the last.
The second to the last page, Senator Shields. A fellow named John R. McLean, McLean, when the writer, quote-unquote writer, got a hold of it, they wrote his name as John R. McLean, McLean. Same result, signature got rejected. Then look at the third example, which is on the very last page. And you have Sharon K. Herman-Ingram, when the writer got a hold of it, wrote it Sharon Ingram. The person's name is registered as Herman Ingram. The person doing the verification input Ingram, and signature got rejected. The writers don't do a good job, and it's not a service to the voters to do that. That's one of the reasons. The other reason is a disturbing practice we've seen with increasing frequency, and it was particularly apparent in the last cycle, where someone was clearly altering information signed by the voters. And the other petition sheets here at the front are examples of that. Dates were crossed out in similar handwriting. Look at that top one where a 4 was replaced with 3. And the 3s are all written by the same person. And we had a new provision in the last cycle in which people were asked to date petitions because the actual dating of the petitions is an important matter. We have a requirement that signatures be witnessed. And so we can't tell when we get these petitions back exactly what dates they're signed when this kind of instance occurs where somebody's crossing out a date and replacing it with a new one. These other sheets in this stack are all examples of that sort of altering of the dates that were written by signers. And I'd like you to turn to page 4, 5. Wow. This is what we're seeing. And when you get to the back, look at this one. Look at these series where the actual dates that people signed were written over in a black marker, and the original date by the person's. It says sheet number 62 at the bottom of it, Senator Shield.
Okay.
They're all in a group, and there's several examples of this. Whoever did this obscured the information by the signers. And that information by the signers is important to us to determine whether or not the laws and the regulations were followed. This is a serious matter for us in determining whether or not there may be potential fraud problems in petitions. Unfortunately, it's not illegal to do that. And it creates a mess. So we think that's a provision in this bill is very important, that only the person signing the petition be the person to write information about themselves on the petition. Now, we did have a similar bill like this 2 years ago, and we did accept an amendment to it that when I reviewed this bill again last night, I noticed it wasn't there, and we would be open to amendment to this bill to allow people with disabilities to have somebody assist them with signing, including the circulator of the petition, but that would be the only case where if you had a person with a disability who just simply could not sign or write all that information for themselves. The signature still must be theirs, however.
Great.
They must have their signature.
Thank you very much. I'm going to hold questions and have you come back, Mr. Lindback, because
okay.
I've got Senator Schrader here, who apparently is on a tight schedule. So with that, I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 164 and open a public hearing on SJR 8 and Senate Bill 466. Ms. Harris, would you please tell us about these measures? And Senator Schrader, come on forward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. SJR 8 and SB 466 are really companion bills. SJR 8 proposes an amendment to the Oregon Constitution to prohibit paying or receiving money based on the number of signatures gathered for the purpose of either nominating a candidate for elective office or for registering people to vote. SB 466 essentially does the same thing, but the provision calling for a constitutional amendment is not in Senate Bill 466.
Thank you. Senator Schrader, welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Senator Kurt Schrader, Senate District 20. Appreciate the opportunity to testify in favor of SJR 8 and Senate Bill 466. These two measures before you are simply an attempt by myself and I think others to ensure the integrity of Oregon's election process. In November 2002, Measure 26 outlawed pay by signature for initiatives and referendum petitions, passed overwhelmingly. Senate Bill 466 simply extends that basic principle, obviously, to the candidate nominee petitions and to voter registration drives, trying to be consistent and, again, make sure that integrity from Measure 26 flows into the rest of our election system. I think, as you've heard and will hear and know from reading newspaper accounts, particularly in the last few years, that paying by signature apparently is ripe for fraud. There have been lots of instances of untoward actions and complaints about the petitions that the people have turned in. We're not trying to stop the petitions or inhibit people's ability to be nominated by petition or do voter registration drives. We simply want people that pursue those activities to be paid by any and all other means except for a payment by signature. So whether it's by hour or whatever, that would be fine. So if we can eliminate the fraud in the system, I think particularly in this day and age, that's a positive message forward going and shows your state legislature is indeed behind you and trying to establish integrity, make sure your vote counts, your signature counts, and is an honest one. I guess that's really all I have to say, Madam Chair. I think it's just a simple good government measure. We have introduced the SJR 8 because the Attorney General is not sure this the statutory measure alone is sufficient and would rely on the committee's good judgment as to how to proceed. But the principle remains the same. We would urge your support.
Thank you, Senator Schrader. Questions for Senator Schrader? Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator, it seems the issue isn't paying for signatures. It's just the piecework aspect. In other words, you don't have a problem with somebody being hourly.
Right, that is correct.
Or salary.
Right.
Okay.
That is correct.
Who does this really affect?
It would affect those individuals that are trying to do voter registration drives and those candidates that want to be nominated by petition.
Well, I understand the broad category, Madam Chair, but I guess what I'm asking you is which group of petitioners is this aimed at?
Madam Chair, Senator, I'm not sure I understand your question.
Well, I assume, Senator Schrader, I think what he's asking is who's collecting the signatures under this that will be impacted by this bill, those regarding registration cards, voter registration cards, is it not?
Yes, Chair, that is exactly the thrust of the question.
I'm sorry, yes.
Okay.
I'm still not tracking, Madam Chair, Mr. Senator Farioli.
Well, then, take the long way.
Oh, you understand.
It seems
fine.
To me that there are groups of folks out there who do regular voter registration drives mm-hmm. that are volunteers, or they are salaried coordinators, or they're paid for, in the last elective cycle, we saw some fairly significant national donors paying for voter registration drives at the state level. And they didn't do it on a piecework basis. They paid $9 an hour. And that happened, you know, in lots of the contested states. And so the question is, if you're only pointing this thing at piecework, who's doing the piecework? Which group is it?
Madam Chair, Senator Farrell, I have absolutely no idea. I'm not trying to target any particular group. I'm just trying to take care of the problem that we've seen with people being paid by signature. I have no agenda here.
Madam Chair, I think the point of my questions, I think, shows the flaw in this thinking. That there are groups out there that have resources to pay people salaried. There are folks that are out there that pay by the hour to get this job done. Don't kid yourself, they've got quotas. The question is, who is it in Oregon that does this on a signature basis? And that tends to be grassroots organizations that don't have a lot of resources that need access to the direct democracy issues. So I would suggest to you that this is just an attempt to make the process of direct democracy more difficult, more expensive, and harder for ordinary citizens to participate in, particularly grassroots groups that are based here in Oregon. So I would just suggest to you that there seems to be an organized strategy masquerading as the attempt to take fraud out of the system, and it is, in fact, just a limitation or an attempted limitation on direct democracy. People don't like the outcome of initiatives. And myself included. I have not appreciated some of the initiatives that have been passed in the state of Oregon. They've made our jobs as legislators difficult sometimes and sometimes nearly impossible.
Senator Ferrioli, my understanding of this measure is that has nothing to do with initiatives. It has to do with voter registration.
One of the bills is voter registration. Am I agree? Basically, it's the issue of paying by the piece, and basically, it's the issue of direct democracy. So, Madam Chairman, I just think that we ought to acknowledge the fact that at least some people think that these are attacks on constitutional rights that the citizens have.
Thank you, Senator Ferrioli. We appreciate your comments. Senator Schreeder, my recollection during this past election cycle is that there was a series of folks who, unbeknownst to them, had their voter registration changed. And I'm assuming what you're trying to get at in this bill is to get at the incentive that's out there for those being paid by the signature to do things fraudulently. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct, Madam Chair.
Thank you. My recollection, actually, one of my staffer's sons had his voter ID changed without his permission or his knowledge.
Mm.
And I assume this is what you're trying to get at.
That's exactly correct.
Madam Chair, can you explain
Senator
how that
Shields,
happened?
We don't know, frankly, Senator Shields, how it did happen. We assumed he signed some sort of petition or something, and it turned out to be a voter registration change from one party to another. But she was unaware of.
Madam Chair, which of these bills deals with that issue?
Senate Bill 466 does, Senator Ferrioli. It takes away the motivation by folks to change signatures when they are being paid by the signature.
Madam Chairman, I don't think anything in 466 deals with somebody changing voter registration designations.
I would respectfully disagree. I think the reason why Senator Schrader brought this bill is to take away the incentive of paid per signature voter registration. Is that correct, Senator Schrader?
That's correct, Madam Chair. And I think, again, I would just emphasize for the committee that it basically just follows on what Measure 26 is all about, which I think Senator Ferrioli is more concerned about. This is very simple. It's just establishing the same principle that two-thirds of Oregonians thought was really good for initiatives and petitions, and let's do the same thing for nominating petitions and voter registration. That's all.
Thank you. Senator Schrader, any further questions for Senator Schrader? Thank you.
I have one quick question.
Senator Atkinson.
Madam Chair, I apologize for being late.
That's okay. Everybody else was, too, this morning.
Thank you. Senator Schrader, I see the intent of the bill. Have you studied the timeline issue? I think I'm the only one that believes this sometimes, but I believe the false timelines that are on the initiative process force, not saying that this gets at this issue, but forces bad behavior when it comes to gathering signatures. Because there's a false timeline that forces people to go as quick as you can, because this building or the judicial branch or Secretary of State wants to monkey around with it. So there's a finite, limited amount of time for an idea to become an idea, people to go get grassroots support. That shortened time creates an industry. Have you looked at that at all? Has anybody ever briefed you on that?
Madam Chair, Senator Atkinson, you may have a good point there. This particular bill and resolution don't really deal with initiatives and referendums, because I actually might agree with you on that. This is just simply for voter registration drives and nominating petitions.
Right. We can talk about that later. I don't want to slow down the committee.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you all very much.
I'm going to close public hearing on Senate Bill 466 and SJR 8 and reopen the hearing on Senate Bill 164 and ask Mr. Lindback to come on forward. Good morning again. You had a question, Senator Ferrioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Good morning.
The Sharpie. Yeah, I'm not referring to the petitioner. Yeah, I'm just talking about the attempt to overwrite.
Yeah.
And I agree. I think this is troublesome.
Very troublesome.
And some of the data is obscured, clearly, but some of it's not obscured. Was there a concern that this was fraudulent information? Or what? Just that it could possibly have been fraudulent information?
Well, we received numerous complaints about fraud.
I'm just referring to this information from Dr. Bell.
There was concern on our part that it was fraud, yes.
Was that investigated?
Yes.
What is the result?
It is one of the matters under investigation, and it is not resolved yet.
It's not currently resolved.
Right.
So it's under investigation.
Yes.
We don't usually get stuff in the middle of an investigation, Madam Chair. I don't see that these numbers or letters are inconsistent with the zip codes and the dates on the rest of the petition.
Well,
did somebody contact Mr. Bell and suggest that it wasn't a very bright idea to use a Sharpie to overwrite data that was written on these things?
Well, unfortunately, it is a matter that's under investigation. I don't want to go into it in too great a detail here. But the issue, Senator Farioli, is that one of the matters of public interest here is proper witnessing of petitions. We have a statute that says that the circulator has to witness the signatures. And the date is an important way that we determine whether or not the signatures were adequately witnessed or witnessed in accordance with law. If somebody writes over the date in particular, that creates a situation where it questions in our mind whether or not that signature was adequately witnessed. And so that's the problem it presents to us and to the people who signed the petition. So this situation where people beside the person who's signing the petition can write in information about that person leads to these kinds of issues, which was the reason for this bill. The second provision of this bill would require individuals paid to gather signatures to register with the state and to receive training on the laws and rules. Currently, law places the responsibility for training on chief petitioners, but too many aren't doing the job. There's ample evidence of that in the sheets I just showed you. And I could bring many, many, many more in to show you, by the box load of problems. There's no penalty for failing to comply with that provision on the chief petitioners right now, so this bill would try a new approach. And that is, somebody who will be engaging in paid signature gathering would be required to register and provide a signature to us at the front end of the process and swear that they have received training, and we would provide training to the chief petitioners. We'd provide online training. We'd make it quick and easy, something that just basically fills them in on the rules. Too many of these folks just are not made aware of the rules. The third provision of this bill would relieve chief petitioners of the responsibility for preparing cover and signature sheets for a petition. Under this bill, the Elections Division would prepare the templates, thus relieving chief petitioners from playing a guessing game in regards to the requirements and relieving the Elections Division from having to say, no, you can't do it that way quite so often. Right now, people come in with draft signature and cover sheets, and then we tell them whether or not it's okay, and then we tell them to go back and fix it, and they may come back again, and we say, no, that's not good enough, go back and fix it. And we can get out of that cycle for everybody involved if our division just does that for people. The fourth provision would prohibit persons other than a person authorized by a chief petitioner from obtaining signatures on a petition. Chief petitioners have complained in the past about signature companies circulating petitions without their permission and then coming to them and wanting them to buy the signatures. This provision places more control over the process with the chief petitioner. So these are four provisions that we think are reasonable and needed in Oregon in order to restore public confidence in the system and do not provide any sort of onerous requirements on the people that circulate petitions. I will leave my testimony at that.
Thank you. Questions for Mr. Lindbach?
Madam Chair?
Senator Ringo.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm not sure I tracked everything you said, but you said one of the provisions was to prevent a person from altering in any way the signature sheet.
Mm-hmm.
What happens if somebody signs the signature, they sign their signature, they put the date, they print their name, they do their residence, they do the city, and they don't do the zip?
Doesn't matter. The only thing required by statute for a signer is to put their signature. The rest of the information requested is an option for the person signing the petition.
Okay.
You take a risk if you only put your signature, obviously, because people may not be able to read it or whatever, and so
it may not be verified.
That's right.
But okay, so let's say that. So you're telling me if they don't put the address or the city or the zip, it still would be a valid signature if you could confirm the name.
That's correct, and it matches with the signature on their voter registration card.
Okay. Yeah. So let's say, just to follow up, Madam Chair. So
Senator Rinko.
Let's say you had a signature, and it looks like on one of these sheets, it's clear to me that the person went through and they just added PDX, PDX, PDX to, to all these to just confirm that it was Portland.
Right.
Now that, if they add PDX, and I'm just looking at the third page here, that would then make it a violation because now they're altering the page.
Well, they're not altering what the person signed because we can still read that.
Okay.
What we're trying to show you with this packet is sort of the variety of things that we have seen.
Yeah.
The real problem lies when, like with the Sharpie, where they're appearing to, and particularly with the date, where they're altering the date because that's an important provision for us.
Okay, but so if the signature gatherer adds PDX, assuming they don't know that they don't even have to do it because it's not, you're not going to get mad at them for that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Lindbach, Section 4 troubles me to some extent. I understand, I assume what you're trying to get at is to provide for some kind of uniformity in terms of petitions. Gatherers and make sure that people know the rules. At the same token, I'm concerned that it may impact Oregonians' access to the process. Could you talk about why you see Section 4 as being actually necessary?
Well, you probably read or heard in the paper that there's been the petition process has become really contentious. I mean, as elections officials caught in the middle of it, it's become more and more like observers at a contentious election. And the chief petitioners present their petitions. And the first thing that happens is, in our office, is we go through and we sort them all and we take a look at whether or not the petitions have the name of a circulator on the bottom, whether we can tell who that circulator is, and the date they provide and whether or not those petitions have been witnessed in accordance with law. Part of that is the circulator's signature. The circulator is required to put at a minimum their first initial and a last name. We get a lot of circulator signatures that are illegible, strange signatures, and we get observers in the office alleging that these petitions are fraudulent because you can't tell what's going on with the circulator. And so we have to go through a process where we try to verify that circulator signature. We go to their voter registration card, if they have one. We've gone through the process where we ask the chief petitioners to provide us other exemplars in order for them to for us to be able to verify that circulator signature. This would provide us a copy of that circulator signature up front so that the chief petitioners and the elections division don't have to go through that mess in the middle of the process of searching for signatures in order to verify them of the circulators. So that's one reason for the requirement. The other is to try and institutionalize some training into the process, which is just clearly not there. I really do think that when people are trained, they want to do the right thing, and they're just not receiving the training they should receive.
Mr. Lindbach, this does not apply to volunteer signature gatherers. Is that correct?
That's correct.
So what you're really focused on is getting at folks who are doing this either for a living or for hire or however you want to say that.
That's right.
Okay. Further questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Farioli.
The two clauses that particularly stand out is that, at least the major summary, the second of which is requires the persons being paid to obtain signatures on state initiative referendum or recall petitions to register with the Secretary of State and complete the training program. I'm assuming no training, no circulation of petitions.
Well, no, I don't think it goes that far. I think if there's no training and there's no registration up front, it would give us reason to look seriously at those petitions as potentially problem petitions.
Then the wording should be suggests training. This is requires. So if it's required training, you don't have it. You're not certified.
I mean, if something's required, we could do things like civil fines or something for them not following through. If we can look at the petitions and determine that the signatures are valid, potentially valid, then that's fine. If it looks like we have a validity problem and there's no training, then, you know, I mean, regardless, we're probably in a fine situation, but it allows us to just more pinpoint where those potential problems are.
They're very
old. I just really think that if you say in statute that persons that are going to be paid are required to have training, and they don't have the training, then all the activities that proceed past the point of the establishment of the fact that they had no training is invalid. And the other thing that's connected to that is that in the fourth section, it prohibits persons other than persons authorized by the chief petitioner from obtaining signatures on a particular state initiative referendum or recall petition. In some recent petitions, what we've seen is a list of active community involved citizens was mailed a set of petitions, and the chief petitioner doesn't know whether or not they will register friends, family, neighbors and return those, or whether those things would just go into the wastebasket as they do at my house. And I don't know whether you'd consider that authorization or not. Would you require a specific letter of authorization to be in the file for each petition? Then how are you going to determine these are authorized people?
That was multiple questions, Mr. Lynette. to take your time and respond.
Let's see where I start. I'll start with the last one first, yeah. And hopefully I'll remember them. Chief petitioners are required to declare at the front end of the process whether some of their signature gatherers are going to be paid or not. And some petitions, I think a notable example was the anti-tax referendum a year ago in January did a lot of their signature gathering by mail and not paid. The majority of their signature gathering by mail and not paid. This provision does not apply to those kinds of efforts. And what we have seen is that there are far fewer problem signatures and fraud in volunteer efforts than there are in paid efforts. There's a marked difference when you look at the petitions between those gathered by people for pay and those done on a volunteer basis. The validity rate is significantly higher for volunteer-based petitions. And so that's why we drew that distinction here.
Minister, just one more follow-up.
Senator Farioli.
The issue of training interests me. I assume that the rulemaking authority for training would be vested in the Secretary of State's
yes,
office.
Yes.
Do you pump your own gas?
Yes.
You do have a card lock?
No, I don't pump my own gas.
You don't pump your own gas.
I didn't when I lived in other states.
The reason I asked that, Madam Chair, is that Oregon has a bifurcated system where some folks that can prove that they use commercial vehicles can pump their own gas. And in order to have that privilege, you're required by state law to take training in how to pump gas. And it's a matter of having an affidavit filed in a file at the master office where your car lock account is, and you actually sign attach a card that you're supposed to carry that indicates that you've been trained, that you're certifying that you've been trained to do it. Do you know how many people actually complete the training?
I'm not familiar with the program.
Do you know that the training consists of tearing the card off of the receipt and signing it? That's the training. And I just I would just assume that bureaucratizing this process and putting the Secretary of State in charge of direct democracy is essentially raising the bar, making difficult the process. I understand the concern about fraud, and that's why we have the due diligence in the Secretary of State's office, and that's why we have complaint-driven process. But to put the Secretary of State, to insinuate the Secretary of State between the citizen and the opportunity to participate in direct democracy at the price of bureaucratizing the process, that's too high a price as far as I'm concerned.
So, Senator Farrelly, I think that begs the question, how do you think we should make sure that paid signature gatherers are complying with the law if they don't have training? I mean, what would be your method of making sure that paid signature gatherers are complying with the law? I think that's the issue. The Secretary of State has proposed one solution. I think it's very clear that we have a problem out there. You know, what are other possible solutions?
Well, I thank you for the question, Madam Chair. I look at this issue the same way as I look at the Supreme Court discussions of what is free speech and what is political speech and whether or not an individual's investment of their own dollars represents political speech, and in Oregon it does. I also look at this in the context of the artificial argument that somehow paying somebody by the hour or salaried is different than paying by the piece.
But Senator Farrelly, voters obviously agreed that having signature gatherers by the piece was a problem, and they easily, handily changed that because they knew the incentive there was too great to do wrong. And so the voters changed that. So, again, what would be your solutions?
Well, Madam Chairman, sometimes I don't necessarily agree. My argument is that bureaucratizing this process doesn't contribute to direct democracy. It makes it less likely that people will be successful when they want to participate.
Thank you. Mr. Limbach, the Secretary of State's here, I believe, to testify on a number of other measures, so we're going to close the hearing on Senate Bill 164 and reopen the public hearing on Senate Bills 466 and SJR 8 and ask the Secretary of State to come forward.
All right, but you haven't been contested yet.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the Rules Committee, for the record, Bill Bradbury, Oregon Secretary of State, here to testify on Senate Joint Resolution 8 and Senate Bill 466, which relate very directly to an issue you were just talking about. I think, as the Chair just stated, in November of 2002, the voters very strongly showed that they wanted to protect the initiative system against fraud by voting 2-1 for Measure 26, which outlawed paying by the signature for initiative and referendum petitions. Unfortunately, Measure 26 did not address candidate nominating petitions or voter registration drives. So Senate Joint Resolution 8 and Senate Bill 466 would extend that principle, that strongly supported public principle, and would outlaw this bounty hunting for signatures once and for all, including nominating petitions and voter registration forms. Bounty hunters who are paid by the signature only care about getting their money. They don't care about making sure a petition is filled out correctly or making sure a voter registration card is accurate and fraud-free. These bounty hunters abuse our system. They pollute grassroots activism with their mercenary greed, and they bring fraud into the election system. Now, we received over 150 emails from people concerned about whether their voter registration card was altered or thrown away in the last election cycle. We received 27 official complaints of false and fraudulent signatures on the petitions to nominate Ralph Nader for president. We just can't ignore these breaches of public confidence in elections. We've got to act to prevent fraud and maintain and restore public confidence. So by prohibiting people who circulate candidate nominating petitions and voter registration cards from being paid by the signature, we take away the incentive for fraud and protect the integrity of our citizen-driven elections process. Now, let me be clear that people could still be paid for their work. They could be paid by the hour or by another reasonable measure, but they could not be paid by the signature. And if they can't be paid by the signature, then there's no incentive to submit fraudulent signatures. The voters have already approved this principle of protecting elections from fraud, and I urge you to approve it as well. I hope that you will support Senate Joint Resolution 8 and Senate Bill 466. And I thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Great. Questions?
Madam Chair.
Senator Farrioli.
I appreciate the discussion, and I'd like to hear more about the Nader issue. How did that play out?
The Nader issue?
Yes, Mr. Secretary. It seemed to me that there was an awful lot of controversy swirling around that issue and a pitched battle over the nominating convention. And I heard a lot of complaints about how the convention was marshaled and held. But I didn't realize there were some issues over the nominating petitions, and I'd love to hear more about that.
The nominating petitions, there were a number of cases. I'd like John Lindbeck. Is John still here? I'd like John to come up. The nominating petitions, there were a number of people who circulated the nominating petition and who were getting paid by the signature. And so there were a lot of complaints that we received, and there was a lot of difficulties that we found in reviewing the nominating petitions in terms of being accurate and reflecting actual voters. And John can give you more specifics about the Nader petition, but it's an example of a nominating petition where you had paid signature gatherers who were not particularly attentive to making sure actual voters signed, but rather they were just wanted to get paid by the signature. It's that kind of incentive to fraud that we want to try to eliminate. And the voters spoke very clearly about it for initiative petitions, and we think that should be applied as well to nominating petitions and voter registration drive. And John, do you have anything to?
Yeah, Senator Farrioli, I've looked at a lot of nominating petitions since I got here in 2001, and I would say that the Ralph Nader nominating petitions and the term limits petition, the initiative petition for term limits, were the messiest and most fraud-ridden petitions I have seen since I got here. And the number of complaints that we received about both reflected that. And as these cases are resolved, you're going to see some criminal convictions in the next sometime in the next year. That process takes a while. We received 27 complaints about the Ralph Nader petition drive. I was personally visited by a janitor in the building where this petition process was headquartered, who said he personally observed signature gatherers giving each other instruction on how to forge petitions. We had people's allegations of people whose names were on the petition but claimed they never signed it.
Right.
We had a signature on a petition from a person who was in fact deceased at the time that it was supposedly signed. We had suspicious situations where signatures were obtained from every house on a street on the same day. I know you've all gone campaigning down a street and knocked on doors. How many times have you found people at home at the same time, on the same day, on the same street, very suspicious situation. The odds of that happening are, of course, low, and it creates a suspicious situation that merits investigation. I told you about the janitor. We had a case of a 90-year-old woman who lived in a care home whose name was misspelled on the petition sheet and says that she never signed it. In regards to voter registration cards, you're all familiar with the allegations that individuals were paid by the card, were registering individuals from one party only, or were throwing away cards of a certain political party. I personally took phone calls from people who told me that they went to a table to register to vote, and they signed a voter registration card, and the person taking the registration said, "Would you mind registering with another party? Because if you register with that party, I'll get paid for this card." Regardless of how this all turns out, and that matter, all of those matters are under criminal investigation as well. Regardless of how it turns out and whether or not we've got enough evidence in order to prosecute people and whether we can go very far with it, because these things are very difficult to investigate and find the people because a lot of them are from out of state and to prosecute. My division has never received so many phone calls of people outraged about an issue related to elections than when those allegations hit the paper that people's voter registration cards were being thrown away rather than taken to the county. People were so offended by that. And it didn't take very long for people to tie that to registration drives where people were being paid by the card. And whether or not any of us agree with that assumption, that is the public perception out there, that the pay by the card was at the root of the problem. We had large groups of voter registration cards submitted in which the party affiliation was switched, was written in. You fill in a little circle on our current card, crossed out, and another one, and then initialed. We couldn't figure out who the initials were. I mean, all the county election officials and the state people had never seen anything like this. And we have never before had cases, at least like we saw in the last election, where people were being paid to register voters by the card. It was something new, and it was something new in a lot of states. And with every election cycle, we see something new that we've never seen before. And this was my moment of saying, I've never seen that before in the last election. It was astounding. And there was fraud. There was fraud. I can tell you that. Now, whether or not we're able to prosecute people, there was fraud, Senator Ferrioli.
Sure.
Senator Ferrioli.
It's my impression that there were some 400,000 new registrations in the last election cycle. Over 300,000 Democrat and about 87,000 or so Republican. You say there was fraud. Could you ascribe a particular element of fraud to one party or the other? Or would you care to do that? Or is it an ecumenical issue that's everywhere?
I think it's an ecumenical issue. The impression that I got is that the people being hired didn't have any particular politics.
Free enterprise is going to be
right. That's right, and that's, part of the problem.
Madam Chairman, I think that the characterization that I heard that makes me just still a skeptic on these issues is that every election cycle brings something we've never seen, mm-hmm. and we're going to be shooting behind the deck forever. We can choke the statistics, we can choke on the ORSs, we can give the Secretary of State rulemaking authority to insinuate himself into the process. We're still going to be shooting behind the deck. Direct democracy isn't necessarily the prettiest picture. I don't think democracy ever is. It's you're going to break eggs if you're going to make omelets. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Ferrioli. Anything further for either one of you? It's very helpful, actually. To hear from you in terms of the circumstances that you've had in your office with regard to this last election cycle, and I think I find it particularly troubling. Senator Shields.
Well, I guess I would echo your statements. I understand that Senator Ferrioli says we'll constantly be shooting behind the duck, but maybe we'll get lucky someday and move our gun sights a little bit and catch somebody in the process or catch it before it happens. I think that's why these bills are worth a try. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Thank you both very much, Mr. Secretary of State. We appreciate you coming this morning.
Madam Chairman, we have a memo from the Disabilities Commission. Is somebody going to address that issue?
Actually, Mr. Lindbach did at the outset of the hearing. He suggested that the amendment, they had an amendment in the bill last session. They're willing to do the amendment this time. I think the amendment would be appropriate.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Behind the scenes joke that I might share with my committee members. Anybody else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 164? Is that a yes from
enthusiastic
Ms. Answers. Eaton, Ms. Miller, and Mr. Williams? Why don't you come on up?
All right.
I think
right.
Actually deserves to be shared, and,
okay.
And I will check in the quotable quotations. The quote regarding breaking eggs is from Lenin, a Bolshevik. But he was actually a proponent of direct democracy.
I don't know.
All right. Come on up. Ms. Eaton, go ahead.
Good morning. Members of the committee, for the record, I'm Kathy Eaton, represent the League of Women Voters of Oregon. I'll be very brief. The League has a strong feeling for having our elections be squeaky clean, and we are longtime strong supporters of direct democracy. And we believe that Senate Bill 164 would put another notch in the effort to make our elections better by prohibiting people from altering petitions. I have served as a chief petitioner. I have been involved in many petition gathering activities, and it has become apparent that there is a real problem with the writers. And whatever we can do to protect citizens who, in all good conscience, sign a petition and expect their name to be respected and counted, we owe it to them as they participate in direct democracy to make sure that that takes place. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Williams. Oh, you want Ms. Miller to go? Okay, Ms. Miller, go ahead.
Thank you, Senator Brown. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Andy Miller. I'm the executive director of Common Cause Oregon. Common Cause is a grassroots organization, and I would like to address in general some of Senator Ferrioli's comments and concerns about the rights of grassroots organizations. Common Cause had problems with the initiative that changed the right of grassroots groups to gather signatures, paper signature. But since that is the law, it seems reasonable to make it across the boards for voter registration. And that's another bill, but I just wanted to add that to the grassroots whole way of looking at this. We are very interested in strengthening the initiative process, and we want it preserved at all costs. It's very important to us. We support Senate Bill 164 because I think it does strengthen the initiative process. And Senator Brown, you were concerned about the section on registration and education. That is a section that I feel is very important. Mm-hmm. I feel that there's so... We had a petition in 2002 that had enough signatures to qualify, we thought. And when the signatures were reviewed, there were so many that were thrown out. And we came so very close. And most of that had been volunteer gathering, but we had paid for some. And when you think you have enough signatures and they get thrown out, your whole 2 years is wasted. And we don't have a lot of money, so it's really important to us. I think the fact that you could train paid gatherers was going to make them more likely to be valid signatures. I'm not concerned about the fraud. I'm concerned about the validity. So for that reason, I would support educating. I did ask when the bill first came up if volunteers had to be trained, and the Secretary of State's office said no, and I said, but may they be trained? And they said yes, and I would certainly ask that all of ours be trained. So,
thank you. Mr. Williams, and then we'll take questions.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, thank you for having me here today. Jason Williams, Taxpayer Association of Oregon. Just for the record, we oppose not just this bill, but Senate Bill 587 and 466.
Before you go any further, I'm going to open public hearings on 566 and Senate Bill 587 as well to thoroughly confuse our staff. Yeah. 466 and 587, so go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. But really, I want to focus this morning on 164. And when we talk about the people with fraud and violators, we would rather focus on the individuals that are making the violations and try to go after the people causing the problem. If someone makes a change to a petition sheet, it's either because they're trying to get clarity or accuracy. And then you have, of course, a few boneheads. And the problem is that when we keep on over-regulating, it's going to be the people that are doing it for clarity and accuracy are going to be struck out, so we're going to disqualify thousands of signatures to catch a few boneheads. So thousands of legitimate people are having their names struck off the rolls because of, in order to try to save them, they were, in essence, lost. So
Mr.
That's,
Williams, wouldn't yes. that have been prevented if the witness of the signature had training and had a better understanding of what the laws were?
Well, Chair Brown, members of the committee, yes, training helps, but also, I mean, there's all kinds of situations that come up. People like to use the dreaded quotation marks because, you maybe have a husband or wife, and someone wants to put in the address because you know what the address of the person is, or what the city is, and so you need to put that in there because you may not be able to find that person on the database. So there's examples on where you want to be able to use a marker because the person, the way they signed it, you can't read it. But if you can do it because you see that person's name, you even go to the voter file yourself and you're able to track down that person's name and you put it on there for clarity and for accuracy, you just save that person from being struck off the rolls. So,
Mr. Williams, I find that a little troubling that we would allow people to write a person's name as clarification for their signature. If it's for clarification purposes, great, but I think the greater harm comes when they can't. There's no one who can read my signature. No one would know what that signature is. I just am really troubled that folks would try and guess what the signature is and then try and write my name in the printed column.
Chip Brown, members of the committee, I'm talking about more, not the name, but I'm talking about other things like the address and the date. I mean, if someone starts a petition, I mean, there is one bad thing that happens with petitions is that the person at the top signs the wrong date. Well, then the next few people that come sign a petition, they all say, oh, what's today's date? It must be the person who just signed it right in front of me. And then suddenly you have everyone that signed the wrong date. Well, you may want to come in there and
understand, Mr. Yeah. Williams. Yeah. But would you agree with me then that it's appropriate to prohibit signature gatherers from writing in a person's name, that we would limit the prohibition to the signature and the name, possibly the address, because that's what enables the folks to verify the signature? I mean, I'm not concerned about the date and the zip code.
Chair Brown, members of the committee, I do see examples where people will just draw a line for what they want for a city, for instance. And if we know what that city is, like say, for instance, a husband and wife, a husband right above, they signed together, and the wife just kind of went, wah, like that, or quotation marks. Well, is it really a problem for that person to put in the city?
I would agree with you. I don't think it is. I think what we're concerned about is the real specific information IDing the voter.
Mm-hmm. Chair Brown, members of the committee, and just the final thing that I want to say is that sometimes when we over-regulate or try to put up too many rules, it stops the middle ground. It stops a lot of these groups from working with each other. And I noticed, with this example, I mean, yeah, there was probably maybe a million or half a million signatures signed in the last election cycle, but this all comes from the same petition, and there seems to be a guy who's a frequent offender. I would like to see more communication between, the Secretary of State's office and some of the groups that they have problems with by saying, hey, here we see a problem. Because I know in the past, it doesn't serve the petition gatherers if there's a person causing problems. We want to know that in advance. We want to be able to go after the person and try what we can to fix the problem.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Williams. Questions for this panel? Ms. Miller, I just want to sort of respond to the shooting at ducks, shooting behind the duck comment made earlier, and I guess Mr. Limbach referred to the fact that, you know, there's always something new coming up, and that and Senator Farrelly mentioned that, we're shooting at ducks, but always behind the duck, which has been my problem a lot in terms of hunting. Could you talk to me why you think that is or is not the case with regards to Senate Bill 164?
Chair Brown, I am a member of the National Rifle Association, if you can believe that. But I don't understand your question. I don't understand shooting behind the ducks.
Senator Farrelly.
You should also characterize it as shooting in front of the egg. The idea is when you have a moving target, each new election cycle brings a new view or a new vision of creative approaches to gathering signatures, to getting out the vote, to rocking the vote, to what's the newest thing we're hearing about, the go something. And then we've got a whole bunch of different initiatives and a whole bunch of different battleground issues in the blue, and all you got to do is look at the blue map, red map. People are engaged in democracy. If we use the last election cycle as a template to increase and ratchet up the rules and the issues and raise the bar and change the statutes, when people read those statutes and look at those changes, in the next election cycle you'll see a whole different set of strategies. People will evolve ahead of our ability to legislate, particularly because we meet every 2 years. So shooting behind the duck refers to doing stuff in hindsight rather than doing anything in foresight.
Chair Brown, Senator Farrelly, I think I understand it now. I would ask then why there are so many attempts at laws to what I think are voter suppression laws that have to do with voter registration. So that would be shooting behind the duck. Also, I don't believe it's shooting behind the duck. I believe this whole process is sausage making, and we keep trying to improve our product. When you have a mistake and you see a mistake in your life, you try to fix it. And I think a lot of these things, we don't know they're mistakes until they cause problems. And I will go back to the case where my organization supported an initiative, did not qualify because of signatures that were not valid, and had our signature gatherers been trained, they would have perhaps avoided that. And when you lose a hundred thousand signatures, it's pretty painful.
Madam Chairwoman.
Senator Farrelly.
Are you seeing a trend, either of the witnesses, are you seeing a trend toward voter suppression strategies?
Chair Brown, Senator Farrelly, I believe I am. I could cite bills that I believe do that, House Bill 2551. House Bill, I can't remember the number of the bill that was heard in North Plains in a very contentious hearing. Not only do I see these as attempts at voter suppression, I find them offensive in a democracy.
Ms. Miller, do you see Senate Bill 164 or Senate Bill 466 as an attempt at suppression?
I'm not free to comment on 466, although I actually did earlier, so I might as well continue my misbehavior.
Now she's shooting ahead of the duck.
Okay, I'm shooting ahead of the duck. Chair Brown, members of the committee, my organization is very divided on how the initiative process is working. We have a strong group that believe, very much like Senator Farrelly, that it's just fine the way it is, and Johnny barred the door, and I think you know who those people are. We have another half who believe that the consequences of the initiative process and some of the voter registration processes are enough to merit taking a look at what we're doing so that we don't have unintended consequences.
Thank you. Mr. Williams, do you want to respond to that question as well? Do you think Senate Bill 164, Senate Bill 466 are attempts at voter suppression or at making sure the process is squeaky clean?
Chair Brown, members of the committee, I think it's overregulation, which will lead to voter suppression. In the last election cycle, I mean, there were really tens of thousands of signatures that were struck out. from all the various initiatives. And if you were to ask, and they were struck out because of technicalities and in order to protect against fraud, but I feel like if you were to actually have an auditor go through every one of those, let's say 10,000 signatures, and find out which one was really an example of actual fraud, maybe one or two of someone, something like that, and I think that we're just disqualifying thousands of people because of technicalities.
Mr. Williams, didn't we have last time around, didn't we break records for the numbers of signatures gathered on a number of initiatives? My recollection was ballot measure 36 broke records for the number of signatures. I mean, that's sort of counter to what you just said. We may be suppressing it, but we certainly have more people signing initiatives than ever before, don't we?
Well, Chair Brown, members of the committee, of course, but the last election with taxes and the marriage amendment, nothing makes people come out like sex and money to the polls. So last election cycle was quite amazing.
Okay. Would both of you, either one of you, be willing to participate in a work group on this bill, Senate Bill 164?
Chair Brown, yes, I would.
I'm open to it, yes.
Okay, great. Anybody else wishing to testify on Senate Bill 164? Ms. Miller, did you want to make another comment?
You had opened a public hearing on 587, I believe.
I'm going to actually leave you up here, and Mr. Williams, you can be excused unless you wish to testify on Senate Bill 587 as well, and officially open a public hearing on Senate Bill 587. Ms. Harris, would you remind us of the contents of this bill, and then we'll have Ms. Miller testify.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We actually had a brief public hearing on this bill back in February during our meeting in Ashland on February 17th. And this measure requires the caption of a ballot title or of a state measure that revises the Oregon Constitution or amends statutes to contain the phrase revises Constitution or amends statutes. It would also require that measures that amend the Oregon Constitution be grouped together on one part of the ballot under the heading Changes to the Constitution. It would require measures involving changes to the Oregon Revised Statutes to be grouped together separately under the heading Changes to Oregon Statutes.
Thank you. Ms. Miller, welcome.
Thank you, Chair Brown, members of the committee. I had asked to speak on this today, and I've spoken at length with your staff and also with legislative counsel about some amendments that I wanted to propose. My concerns with this bill are that when initiatives are tied together, in other words, if the application of one is dependent upon the other, if they are separated, it may confuse the voters. The voters may think they're two separate initiatives. I'll use an example, initiative petition 8 from this cycle, and initiative petition 37. 8 is a measure that changes the Constitution to allow contribution limits. Initiative petition 37 is the statutory limits. Should those two be separated on the ballot, it may cause confusion for voters. They may not realize that they have to vote for both. So I talked to legislative counsel, and unfortunately, there's not a way to amend the statute legally unless the chief petitioners have indicated within the initiative petition that they bills need to be tied. So I just wanted to point out for clarity for voters, I think it's a very good idea to say it changes the Constitution or it's a statutory change, but whether those should be widely separated if they are indeed need to be considered together, I don't know if that's good information for the voters. In the future, what we should do is make clear to people if they're going to have two that are tied together that they should reference that within the language. And then legislative counsel said that we could indeed on the ballot, I don't know if you're aware, committee, on the ballot, part of this bill would put these in that order on the ballot, which was a significant change. And my biggest concern is voter intent and voter education, making sure they have the right information. And I'm sorry I don't have more examples. Ms. Harris and I worked hard trying to think of another one, but that's the one I knew best. So.
And Ms. Miller, just to clarify, right now it's certainly possible that two initiatives, let's say a constitutional one and a statutory one, one could pass without the other passing. Is that not correct?
That is correct.
So
what generally happens, but not always, is the two would be filed together, and they may then be approved sequentially, and there would be one right after the other. So it wouldn't be quite as confusing. That just was really an interesting study, and Ms. Harris and I both agreed what we learned from thinking this through and what could be a better way to do this. That, again, like the other bills, you want the voter to be honored, the intent to be honored, the signature to be honored. In this case, if they want to have this passed, they shouldn't lose it. It's kind of like a double majority situation if they don't understand that they have to vote for both.
Great. Questions for Ms. Miller? Thank you very much. We're going to close a public hearing on Senate Bill 587, and we're going to open a work session on consideration of drafts and legislative concepts. Okay. The chair would...
Hurry up, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Atkinson. I'm so glad you've changed the world. The chair would move the following legislative concepts and the following bill drafts for introduction. The first legislative concept is from Vice Chair Farioli, a bill to extend the sunset provisions in ORS Chapter 419C. The LC drafts are the following: LC 1121, LC 1121-1, LC 1121-2, LC 1121-3, LC 1121-4, LC 1122, and LC 3506. Is there any discussion other than the fact that your vote in favor of this motion does not signify your support or opposition to the substance of the measures, and that introduction of these measures, I promise, Senator Atkinson, will not delay the session? Any discussion?
Only, Madam Chairman, that the Vice Chair wishes to thank the Chair for the introduction of measure extending the sunset provision of ORS Chapter 419C. It's very important to the folks in Jefferson County.
You're welcome, Senator Farioli. Anything you need, we're happy to try and meet.
Madam Chair, I also want to thank you, the great and mighty non-gender chairperson Brown, because I had one that we couldn't find a relating clause and got introduced last time.
Great.
So
thank you, Senator Atkinson. Is there an objection to the motion? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. Thank you, too, for your courtesies. Seeing that there's no further business to come before the committee, at least this morning, we are adjourned. I know. I'm sure you guys have been going...